Rich and work with Paul Shadwell, who's one of my favorite colleagues. And also work with our Lilly project there. So, as well as it's our connection with Chris, too, is our common Lilly world. I was thrilled to be selected as the team that we work with the Holden Lilly project. So, just very excited. So with no further ado, we'll get to know each other more during this week. Tonight, what we'd like to do is to spend some time kind of tying up the morning. We want to get to number three and four up on the board, I understand. So what we're going to do is actually have you break into some smaller groups so that we can go into a little bit more experience, sort of connecting you to a sort of common experience that you may have had at Holden, not necessarily in terms of, we would never expect that people had the same experience here, but to be with people who came for a common purpose. So what we're going to do is to move you into some groups, and we're sort of cohort groups, and let me just describe what those are, and then Paul's going to literally give you, let you know which group you'll be in. And one of the four of us will be your facilitator. And in those small groups, there'll be two tasks. One will be to spend some time finishing up the conversation about thoughts and reflections that emerged when you heard people telling their stories this morning. And then secondly, any patterns or anything that you heard, themes that you saw emerging from those stories that would connect with your own experience. So essentially working with three and four up on the board there. And it's my understanding you did a little bit of writing on that. So that will help. Then we're going to work on that for 20, 25 minutes, and then what we'd like to do is to have you break into a little bit of writing on two other questions that your group leaders will give you when you're in your small groups. A little bit of writing on that, and then we'll have an opportunity to do some sharing, and we'll close. So we'll go at the most an hour and 15 minutes, maybe an hour, depending on the conversation and how, where your energy is. The sessions will be recorded tonight, so all of the group leaders will have a tape recorder working with that. So, any questions about the process tonight?
And we'll break up into different geographic areas, let you know, too.
Yeah, and I'll give you the places for you.
Will we be sure to stop in time for Vespers?
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. We will be finished by 7:30. That's what I understand.
7:45.
7:45, so I'll give you 15 minutes to go. For sure, yes. That's a non-negotiable.
Okay.
The Vespers services here. So the four groups will be the children / family group, people who spent significant time here as children, or people who are part of the family, and that group will be with myself in the Creekside room, so we'll go there. Then there are two groups meeting in Narnia. There will be a group that is a young adult group from the 70s and early 80s, and that group will meet with Gary, and you'll know who you are in a minute. And then the young adult group from the late 80s to the 90s and
to the present,
I guess we would say, we'll go with Chris. And then those that spent time here as the sabbatical participants, or on sabbatical, will be here here in this room in the hall. So, okay. So, Paul, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. And we did the trickiest group to divide were the young adult groups, because people came so many different times, but we're thinking about your primary time that you were here. So why don't I first just let people know who's going with Lucy, and that's sort of the family group again. So it would be the Akfins, Tasha and Arcourt, and then Cassandra Howe, who came here as youth, and then Margaret Lovejoy and Suzanne Lovejoy, who came as mother and daughter here. So that would then go with Lucy over to the Creekside room. Then for the more mature young adults who came at an earlier period, I have here, and again, I would just go down to the Creekside since they're two rooms side by side, and if you don't feel Like, that's your group. Or Narnia, I'm sorry. Side by side, just switch into the other
group.
Well,
you have to remember Ashley Brilliant's famous comment on the score.
Oh, yeah, hit me with that.
Inside every older person is a younger person wondering what happened.
Okay. We have here, for the folks who had spent time here in the 1970s, we had Don Coffey, Will Mochin, Mark Ofgran, Joel Kui and Sarah Kui, as well as, we're adding to that group, Linda Gamrath, Rebecca Lindstrom, Robert Lindstrom, and that would be, and then Anne. So that would be that group for the cohort of the younger folks, whatever she said. Yeah, exactly, the older folks, yes. And then the other groups that we have would be of that. Would be Nadine Sanders, Marnie Stromseth, Stacy Judela, Ann Dwyer, Melissa Kreider, and that, did I forget anybody in that group?
Kristen.
Oh, Kristen, yep, and Kristen. Perfect. And then the rest of the folks should be...
Yeah, you got
me. Oh, yeah, I got you. And then the rest of the folks should be about 8 sabbatical folks who will just stay right here with me. Great, and so why don't we just head up? Yep.
Let's ask you.
Yeah.
I should stay with the staff, but I'm going to go with the other group.
Yeah, I would go with the other group. Yeah. Yeah. Are you?
I didn't hear my name.
Were you here as the?
Yeah, I was here in my primary thing. Yeah, was not the staff.
Oh, great. So then go with them. Yeah, and then just find your own room. Yep.
Yeah.
Or we could be in a square and just be like,
And we're going to just get a tape recorder here.
Tomorrow we are not opening up that door and letting any flies in. Very annoying. Maybe they'll die overnight. They only live 24 hours, I think. So.
Or a little known fact, Lucy is actually an expert fly hunter. So yeah, so you just turn off the lights in the room and they're just appeared. Yeah, I'm just kidding. This is the way that rumors start, you know.
She goes after him with a shotgun.
Yeah.
She just hasn't been on wax before, has she?
Actually, Lucy actually has a great history. She worked out here as campus pastor at University of Washington and other. Did you know
but
her?
That's on the coast.
Ah.
See, I'm talking about being in the eastern part of Washington and Idaho. I mean, people have guns and, you know.
Or San Francisco.
You're
gunshot.
Drive-by.
Well, this is a great group, and I'm glad to be helping to lead the reflection of this group. And I think that people who come here as sabbatical participants, who come here for renewal, are just very integral parts of the whole Holden experience. And I think that having you as a group here to reflect with us can really help deepen our understanding of what it's like to be on sabbatical or renewal here, both for your time here. I think that you can also help think about the ways that Holden has supported you structurally during your time of sabbatical or renewal, and ways that it might be able to be improved. And I think that the other way that you're really helpful is not just for how you can reflect on what's going on here at Holden Village, but how you can serve to reflect on what's going out in the wider world. Mm-hmm. So part of Holden's mission is to serve as a place of renewal and sabbatical, knowing that a lot of you, especially the way that you shared this morning, come from various pressures, joys out in the real world, of things like doing ministry on a daily basis, of trying to incorporate your vocational call into your career, and helping us reflect a little bit more on what was going on in that wider world that Holden might be able to connect to. So I think it's a very exciting group to do some reflections with. And the way that we thought we would get started is, since we didn't get a chance to really reflect on the morning session and to really hear one another. Why don't we just take a couple moments, if you didn't have time to write or if you just need time to review your notes, why don't we just take a little bit of just time just to think a little bit about question number three. And this was sort of the idea that this morning we did a lot of deep listening. People talked about their own experiences, but there wasn't a whole lot of interaction there, and that was on purpose. And so hopefully when other people spoke, you had some reflections or things that resonated with you, things that you might be really different from you, other things. And we'll just keep, and we'll take a couple seconds, review your notes, and then we'll just share about how that was.
Well, it seemed to me that almost everyone used the word community in a few different senses. One, simply to refer to the village itself and the gathering of people here, but also to refer to some kind of mystical or spiritual gathering of people or body of people. But I still had the sense that people had very different ideas in mind when they used that term, and possibly many different definitions. And if we had had the time, I really would have liked to hear what that term meant for each person.
So, Mark, if this was a theme that you think this group, the sabbatical group, could pursue, what one of those themes might be talking about what community feels like for a sabbatical or renewal person, or what it doesn't feel like for a sabbatical or renewal person?
Yeah, that could be one thing, or maybe also the degree to which being in community could help a sabbaticaling person, and the degree to which solitude could help a sabbatical person. Not that they're diametrically opposed, but the solitude part is not necessarily what you think about when you think about community. Mm-hmm. But I think solitude is extremely important. It was really important for my sabbatical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was struck by your comments and then Dave's comments. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, if you had run into Dave, you would have felt like he was part of a clique because he didn't want to talk to anybody. But when I heard him say why, it made perfect sense. You know, and I could understand why he wouldn't want to be out there seeking community, you know. But it was interesting because that could be perceived as an affront, you know, to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Who might feel like they're not part of the community that you, you know, aren't letting them in because you don't want to talk to them. So that's just one of those dynamics of being in community that was interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yes, I mean,
okay. Go ahead.
One of the things that struck me in listening this morning, especially that I'm remembering Jim and Margie, and just reflecting on my own self when I came on sabbatical, is how difficult it is sometimes to be a pastor. You know, there are a lot of stresses and pulls and tensions and how this place, for me, and I thought I heard that from some others as well, provided that kind of respite place, a place for recentering, for maybe doing some healing, or reconnecting with God, if that had gotten kind of lost along the way. However, you know, that was affirming to me, I think, just to hear, oh yeah, okay, yeah, we all struggle with this, and a lot of us are in, I don't know if you were the one that talked about isolation, Margie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm in Eastern Oregon, you know, I fortunately have some colleagues, ecumenical colleagues, but to connect with colleagues in the Episcopal Church, it means at least a 1 hour drive one way, at least, or email, or, you know, that kind of thing. So there is that isolation. And that's one of the senses in which I found community feeling very good here. So.
I like the balance of solitude and interaction. I'm an introvert, you know, so that's hard work for me to do that, and it does wear me out. And new people every day is too much. You know, I can't do that. And I was working on a project as well, you know, a writing project, and so I set up stuff in my room. And I remember people walking by, and somebody made the comment, "Oh, yeah, are you in there writing the Great American Novel?" Actually, I was working on a clergy couple project, and it was torn, but you were writing the Great American Novel. but that's okay to do that here. Mm-hmm. But 50 steps away was as much interaction with people as I wanted. And that was always available. So I really liked having both of those things available in a very small geographical area. That was a real plus. And a very healing thing for me. Mm-hmm. My wife's the definition of extrovert. Mm-hmm. And so whenever there's a three-way conversation, I'm left out. Well, she didn't come here. She's here this time, but she didn't come here during that month. And I rediscovered a lot of stuff about myself. And that was just sort of smashed away because I'm an introvert and she's always in the forefront of conversations. And it was really fun. Yeah, you know, sense of humor, taking initiative in conversations, being the first, not the last to speak all the time. You know, I enjoyed that.
Was that a conscious choice that you decided to come here as an individual rather than both of you together?
Yeah, that's... This was part of a sabbatical which we both got in an overlapping kind of structure. It was one of the Lilly-funded clergy renewal grant things, so we had to have a pretty highly structured proposal to put forward. Mm-hmm. So we each had 2 months independently and 1 month together. Mm-hmm. So it worked. This kind of setting worked well for that. And the other end of my sabbatical was in a monastery that I've been going to for 25 years. You know, so the monks are friends, and that was a familiar place, but... Uh-huh. You know, get as much solitude there as I wanted, you know? And then I keep going back there because that's a safe place for me too.
A recurring theme I heard was that people came here to grow. I love the analogy that Holden Village is the fertilizer.
Yeah, yeah.
And we come with the roots, and the fertilizer helps us to grow. And I mean, just people talk about growing in many different ways: growing in faith, growing in understanding of God. Maybe God was way too small for them, or God was, as they understood fundamentalism, or something like that, mm-hmm. and that really brought in a different perspective of that, or to grow personally in terms of justice and understanding there's another voice they can have.
Mm-hmm. I think tomorrow night, too, just to let you know, we're going to try to reconvene in these groups. So I'm just kind of gathering some themes and some initial reflections, and we can hopefully, if we don't probe that deep tonight on some of these things, we can generate more tomorrow during the same session.
I heard people talking about either crisis or woundedness. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure what I want to do next, crime crisis, mm-hmm. or you talked about a nervous breakdown, kind of woundedness, and I had a sense of some woundedness when I came on. That I heard some of that, you know, not from everyone, mm-hmm. but from enough people.
Yeah, the image with that was having the holes in the living water.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
yes.
I love that.
So that was great. I wrote that one down.
Yeah, that was
in the journal.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Did you say
and that?
That
it's okay to
no,
have the
holes.
Dawn.
Yeah.
Because
yeah. 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 somehow we get the message that you have to have it all together.
Yeah.
Saying that you think resonate for you as a sabbatical or mm-hmm.
Another thing I heard people say, some people said that they find it difficult to leave. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that was the sabbatical people as much as people who had been here under other statuses, mm-hmm. but I think it's kind of an interesting, you know, come down from the mountain of transfiguration
yeah.
kind of
yes.
thing. You know, they don't want to leave, and you know, it feels like a safe place. And all
yeah,
that.
When I got home, I fantasized moving here. It's like, oh, I'll come for
sure.
5 years. That's great. I'll see much better when the crap I was dealing with at home.
You know, it reminded me a little of a situation I found myself in a while back. I was I taught English in Japan for about 2 years. And I was in a sort of provincial city, not Tokyo, so the number of Westerners there was fairly small. But one thing a lot of them had in common was that they all seemed to be misfits a little bit, who didn't really get along very well in the U.S., but for one reason or another found it much easier to live in Japan, where you were a little bit of a celebrity, if I can use that word, and Japanese were like, oh, teach me English. And a lot of people did not want to go home from that dynamic.
Yeah, that's interesting. We were in France for 3 years and worked with a church in France. And we ran across a lot of missionaries going to or from different places. But they're a different breed.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lot of exposure to the international community. And there is such a thing. I mean, it was people who live internationally and identify with that a lot more than with a particular country. And, yeah, same sort of thing. We've been back now 10 years, and we still don't fit. Uh-huh. You know, we came back to familiar territory, same state even. And,
because you have a different perspective?
Probably. Different set of values and wider view. There are people really different from us in this world, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. In North Raleigh, you're not allowed to do that. You wear a uniform. You know? Oxford cloth shirt, you know, khaki pants. You know, all the business people dress alike, and the students dress alike. We talk so much about individual expression in this culture, but we don't do it. Mm-hmm. In France, they don't talk about it. They just are all different. It's just wild. Yeah. We still struggle with that. That's interesting. But here, it's the same. It's exactly what you're saying. A lot of people who don't quite fit the mold for one reason or another.
Well, and I kept hearing from people, and I know it's true for me, that here I feel so comfortable just being who I am, but most of the time I have felt like a misfit in my life. And it's only now in the later years that I'm really saying, Mom, this is who I am, and I, you know, I kind of like myself, and maybe that's just the way it is. And celebrating that more than bemoaning it or trying to fit in or whatever, and it doesn't work. So there's something about this place that's a safe place to be totally who you are, and I heard that. And it's an interesting idea of misfits. Yeah.
I heard about inclusivity and hands-on experiences possible at Holden. Also a lot of emphasis on social justice issues, liberal, non-mainstream views, simplicity, people over things.
And those values were, you heard that as kind of some common themes.
Well, that was what I heard for number three, that's what I wrote down for number three, that I heard those, and those are issues that that I like, but they didn't come to me immediately, but listening to other people, I resonated with those. That was for number three for me.
I think it's, you know, one of the things I said in my comments was the power of grace. And, you know, I heard that permeating through so many people's stories, coming to a place where you can be accepted for who you are, wherever that is, wherever that is on a spiritual journey, whether you're Christian or not Christian, whether you're agnostic, you know, you're accepted here. And that graceful, filled acceptance allows a person to bloom into who they need to be, or where God is trying to lead them.
A theme that I noted too was opening of new horizons. the folks who, how people are, people like I do. The geological horizon, I've never been in a setting like this. It's new territory. In relationships, you know, having relationships with people that are very different. That's a new experience.
Well, I was just thrilled to have my daughter here with me and have her experience more genuine Christianity, you know, because children and pastors see behind it to the church too, as much as we try to protect them from it. She just absolutely blossomed here, and she considers herself an agnostic now. She's 16, part of it's being 16.
Yeah.
But I'm not really worried about her. You know, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
This is where she needs to be, and part of that is, you know, needing to discover who she really is. And she knows grace. I know she does. Mm-hmm. She just hasn't experienced it yet in her teenage angst.
I use the word authenticity and creativity in number 4, and also the word tolerance, and it seemed like so many people sought out Holden, solace of Holden when there were times of transition.
And
I also noticed that almost everybody were in either like the artistic or service professions, like teaching, ministry, artists, and I also noticed that many young people seem starved for validation and support for values like service, creativity, community, and self-expression. And there also seemed to be a lot of people that were very feeling and very intuitive.
That was good because this may be a community that attracts a certain type of people.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That kind of broadens out, I think, or puts a more positive perspective on misfit, because some people might hear misfit and think, I don't know, whatever they might think, but not a positive kind of quality. And I think that there's a very positive quality sometimes about about being a misfit in terms of creativity or seeing things a little differently or going through the world intuitively. And,
I like to say out of the box.
And that is a struggle clergy go through, because we are misfits.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
We don't fit well into the culture and the things that we talk about and we value.
Can you say something a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, spirituality is pretty, it's what we do. I mean, that's what we talk about. And people are interested in spirituality in terms of morality, and that's in the people that we associate with. But to get into, to talk about how that relationship with God, a God full of grace and hope, transforms life and shapes it, I think that's difficult for a lot of people. It's in a sense, too deep.
Or there's a barrier there just because we're part of an institution. That's the context. I'm in Santa Cruz. People just hear pastor.
Yep.
Immediately associate me with Pat Robertson. And so there's a stigma there automatically. And so there's no wanting to get beyond that, really.
For those of you who are clergy, do you feel like you can come here and just sort of be yourself and you don't have to have the collar on?
Yes.
I liked what Anne first person said. She said, the center is always here.
Yes.
And so, and she's been coming back for many years. And and so, I definitely feel that, you know, like there's a place I can go where I can recenter, you know, because I'm there's so many forces pulling me off of what I know the scriptures call me to be and do, and what I remember the origins of my call and that kind of thing.
As Dave said, we wear a uniform. And I appreciate Margie saying that when you left here, you didn't. You were going to be different. You weren't going to wear that uniform. You were going to be you. And that was good.
But part of the problem is that that even if you're changing and wanting to do new things, people take a look, they see the collar on Sunday morning, you know, and the robes or whatever, mm-hmm. and they have their expectations, and so that's always part of the tension. Like you said, people say, oh, well, it must be like hell.
Yeah, we're misfits because people don't treat us the way they treat other people.
Well, if I were the collar, they'd think I was someone sexually abusing children.
That's the other side of it, you know, there's that side and then there's the fundamental side of it. And probably male clergy suffer with that more than I think the women.
Well, I got invited to go to a home party kind of thing. It was one of these serendipitous things just recently. I'm standing in line at the post office, a whole big line, you know. I tried to engage people in conversation, nobody did. Then this woman started talking and we just seemed to hit it off. I shared my name, Margie, her name was Marge. And the next thing I know, she's inviting me to something at her home. And I said, I'd love to come. And you know, and I said, this is so very serendipitous. And then I was thinking, now, when I go there, what will I tell them that I did?
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to tell them that I'm a pastor.
Yeah.
Because that will change
the whole dynamic.
And it's like, well, what can I do to tell a lie that's sort of not really a lie? You know, I could say I'm a teacher, but then they'd say, well, where do you teach? I'm really, because it's next Thursday, you know, a week, and it's like, okay, you know, and I do have to figure out something to say.
And you sell fire insurance.
No, I absolutely don't. But the one guy asked him, I said, I'll only tell you if you promise not to treat me any different, you know. You sort of have to put that disclaimer there. And I talked to Nadine, and she said when she talks to people about Holden, she will not call it a Christian retreat center. She'll call it a spiritual retreat center. Because Christian brings up those images of evangelical, right-wing, you're damned to hell kind of
right. Fire insurance.
thinking about Christianity, which is just appalling. And I'm surrounded by it with my own family in some ways. And
there are neighbors in North Carolina.
Yes.
Everywhere these days.
Yeah, this is a constant presence.
Yeah.
And that's one of the struggles, I think, is trying to, you know, that Holden satisfies some of that need to just appear and you're Sarah or Jim or, you know, whatever, and then things are revealed as you want to reveal them. And I know in the small town I'm in, being a small town, it's a little hard to be anonymous, but really had to make a real effort to try to find some things that I enjoy doing to be a group outside of the congregation. And so this provides some of that as well for people.
Yeah, the other side of that is I really enjoy lots of things about being a pastor.
Oh,
yeah. And I was asked to preach for one of the Vesper services. That was really fun. It's a very receptive audience. But they stayed awake, you know?
Is that a reflection on your moral service?
I think you get pretty high marks for something. But the preparation for that in this setting was really stimulating, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And it was fun to draw on what had happened in the couple of weeks prior.
So in a sense, even when you were, I'm just trying to summarize here and just kind of provide some things, even when you were in a quote-unquote official role as a leader, it felt different, or there was something different about it than when you were back doing it?
Yeah, I'm nobody's pastor here. Mm-hmm. I got to be a preacher for one evening, and that's fine. I didn't have to do
It's more free
one-on-one stuff. In fact, there was a spiritual director here that I met with, and that was helpful for me.
So there was a distinction in your mind between being a preacher and being a pastor, and you got to be a preacher here rather than having to...
Sure, I got to do the parts I liked. I wasn't obliged to do any of it, but volunteered to.
Well, one thing that happened for me is I was here for a month. How long were you here?
A month.
Yeah. And I avoided doing anything. I didn't want to volunteer for anything. I didn't want to do anything. I got volunteered to do dish duty. I guess that was just because I was here for a month. And so I finally volunteered to do what they call matins. Now I think they called it morning devotions 6 years ago when I was here. And people loved what I did. I had people coming up to me throughout the day talking about it. And it was like, oh, darn God. You know? there was part of me that really was hoping that God would lead me away from parish ministry and do something else. And it's like,
look, you're still good at it.
Yes! It was aggravating as well, yeah, to a certain extent. But at the same time, it was affirming that, okay, you're in the right place, you just have to figure out how to do it in a more comfortable way, I guess.
For me, it was sabbaticals. I wanted to be away from those things. And have rest from it. And, so I didn't want to do any of those roles. I would do other things, but not those.
So for me, I, you know, in contrast, I really came here to be a writer. Mm-hmm. And because this provided me the time and space to do that. And I didn't really need to be it publicly for people, or, I mean, you know, if people asked me what I was doing here, I told them. I talked about my book that I was working on if they were interested, but, you know, I didn't have any predefined role, mm-hmm. and the conditions that I went here under sabbatical enabled me to be more in my vocation than I usually am in daily life.
And one thing I really appreciated when I came here was I engaged in a lot of creative things that were different than I could ordinarily do, because I had meals here, I had my kids here too, but, like, you know, they were young, and, you know, they went to Narnia, and, well, one of them went to Narnia, one of them went to Dreamy Miners, but anyway, I had that space that I never had before, and it was awesome. I painted every day. I went to writing workshops every day. I wrote, and it was awesome, and I also really avoided, I mean, I did garbology one time in addition, but I avoided taking on, because I'm a fixer, and I wanted to, whenever they beg for the volunteer, you know, just really hard, we really need people really bad, and it was, like, really hard for me not to just want to run in there and do it, but it was so life-affirming to do creative things.
Something I've been hearing kind of underneath all the stories this morning and all this, and we've touched on different things, but education, being able to learn new things. I mean, one of the things I enjoyed was going to the Bible classes each morning, and I was here for a month, and so there were four different people teaching Bible classes. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to, I just sit there and take it in, you know? And the wonderful liturgies and you know, doing clay. I don't know who talked about clay. Someone.
Okay.
Oh, that was you, Dave. And I really am sorry I don't have the clay things anymore that I made. I had a picture of one, but you know, it was just really exciting to just be able to do those. And of course, that's the creative thing, but kind of the education of the love of learning and having new experiences.
Yeah, and I love that. I don't see it as much this time, but when I was here 5 years ago, I did a lot of, like, bird watch. You know, they had, like, bird hikes. They had historic hikes. They had a lot, first responder, like, things, and the public could go to it. It was just really interesting.
Were some of you here when there was not any program being offered?
I was.
Yeah.
It was just people who worked here.
Right.
What time of year were you here?
In May.
Did that seem like a problem? Does that seem like a problem? And you probably as well. This may not have interested you.
I didn't take advantage of a lot of the classes or anything. And I was actually also here in May and June.
Did you wish for that, or did it?
No, because I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't know much about what people And so I enjoyed getting to know the staff. And I have a lot to read, and so I just wanted to. I was satisfied. I did take a. There's a woman who was led yoga, and so I went to her yoga classes, and that was fun.
I went to a class that was an evening forum on what constitutes good sex. It was so stimulating. It was so stimulating to have a diverse group of people, teenagers, you know, talking about good sex in the sense of holy sex, responsible sex, and what defines things as good in the sense of would God describe this as good? And we came up with a bunch of different parameters, and none of them really implied marriage. And it was, you know, very, very interesting. And just, you know, to me it's like, wow, this is great! You know, because one woman on the forum says, well, I don't think we can talk about good sex without mentioning the clitoris. And that's how she started off, you know. But then other people were talking about responsibility, that your relationship enhances the world in some way, economic responsibility. And I have been coming off my teenage daughter having a baby, unmarried, you know, so it's like, whoa. So it was really just like, this is a great place. That and the queer theology in the year 2000 class. Just to have people who were open about talking
just
about...
Like
open about talking about such a crucial issue that in our society gets really skewed. And trying to look at it in a liberal way, but at the same time not... in an unholy way, I guess.
I have to say worship was very helpful. You know, the 2 weeks I was here, they did have the men youth weekends, and so there was worship at that large group of youth. But during the week, it was a smaller group. It was very intimate. Many of the people, almost everybody knew each other in the room. It was just a great worship experience. And I appreciated just being someone who came and could worship, and someone else prepared it.
Yes.
And it was almost every time it was a very inspiring moment for me.
We have quite a few topics here that tomorrow night we can help go even deeper with. I just sort of wanted to get things on the table for right now. And what I'd like to do, just because you know, we didn't want to go all the way to 7:30 tonight, we wanted to kind of go about to 7:15 or so, is just to think about a couple other topics that we'd like you just to write about just for a few minutes. And then we'll talk about this, get some more things on the table. So we'll write for about 5 or so minutes, a couple more things, and then kind of talk about these things a little bit. And I guess one of the topics is, now that you've had a chance to think about the themes, if there were 3 things, we have our exact phrasing here, but if there were 3 things that you wanted us to know that were important to the sabbatical experience for you, what would those 3 things be? So if there were 3 aspects of the sabbatical or renewal experience that you had, what would those 3 things be? And then a second set of questions would be, if you can phrase it as questions, so this can be Jeopardy, what were the questions that you were asking while you were on sabbatical? So what were the questions? If you could put it in the form of a question, what were some of the questions that you were asking while you were on sabbatical or renewal?
Thank you.
and our transcriber is just in a just space. Say what your three things were, and then maybe just if you want to go into just a short little 2 minute or 3 minute just explanation of one of those things, that would be great. Does that mean that's your signal?
It's my tribute to Wes Preet. That was his song. And let's see. The one I wrote that I'll share is having the safe and sacred space to be weak and to heal from carrying the burden, being part of a dying church, not only the one that I serve, but in general, and feeling isolated as a pastor. I knew I could come here and just work the lawns and gardens, which is what I love doing, trimming trees and carry my baby on my back, and that's all I needed to be responsible for. I didn't have to, and I could reconnect with like-minded folks after having had a number of very significant people in my life move away. Having that kind of knowing that could be there went a long ways and helping me calm down and recover from the anxiety disorder I was diagnosed with.
How long were you here, Jim?
3 weeks.
I sought for solitude. I wanted to get away from home and just have a place where I could pray and meditate, to read. I had that. I found that at the creek and in the mountains and in my room at the labyrinth. I just different kinds of places. And it really helped me to center. This place was just a great place to center. But I wanted some solitude, but I needed people. I didn't want to be isolated. I needed to be around people. Because there's some places you can go and be really by yourself to do all of that, but I would go crazy if I did that. I needed people as well. And so there were always people around. I mean, just any time that I wanted to engage with people, just walk out the door and there were people that wanted to talk. And the third was worship. I got into worship. I did hear a lot about worship at Hope, and I wanted to experience that.
I put creativity, a nurturing, liberal, accepting, and inclusive environment, and rest, a place apart, no electronics, a place of wilderness beauty.
Free to just be and not produce something.
Yeah.
To interact with people if I wanted to or not, to volunteer or not, to go to classes or not, to nap or not, to talk or not. You know, all of that was great when I was seemed to be the one that had to be the in charge, leader kind of thing.
For me, it's also the importance of exposure to a liberal thinking community of believers or seekers, so I didn't feel so alone in my own journey. And the possibility to do different things creatively that had nothing to do with my job. I learned to weave, I tie-dyed a shirt, I made a clay whistle. You know, all of those things were very therapeutic.
Yeah, I put to have a place where I could work, rest, participate, have solitude, stimulation, as I wanted to take advantage, not somebody else's schedule. Mm-hmm. Set my own pace and work on the things I wanted to or not.
You know, I wrote something similar, and the great thing about that is that, you know, at work, I don't really have anybody looking over my shoulder or sweating me, but I can't just take a nap when I need to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the amount of things that I am allowed to do is constricted, and that's, those boundaries are really freed up here. Mm-hmm. Another thing I wrote was private space. It's, you know, I live with my partner, and that's a great relationship, and I love our house, but boy, I really needed just a place of my own that I could shut the door and do whatever I needed to. And I would even go so far as to say that if a couple comes up here and one person is on sabbatical, they should be given two rooms. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, the person, they can just get alone if they need to.
That was the first thing I put down, was the private room was an absolute blessing. I came to Holden not knowing anything about it other than I could afford it, and the setting. I was living in Kentucky at the time, and I lived most of my adult life west of the Mississippi, and I so wanted to be back out west and the mountains. So the setting was just, you know, it was like I soaked it in. But I, you know, I didn't know what to expect, and I was used to living on my own. And so the private room was a blessing and a real surprise. I thought I was going to have to be sharing with different people all the time. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I can do that. But the flip side of that was the expectation that I would be a part of community, because meals are taken together. I wanted to go to the worship and experience that. You know, I was in work, different work parties and so forth. So couldn't totally isolate. I mean, I've gone on, you know, kind of silent retreat kind of things where I go and get a tray and carry it back up to my little hut, you know. And so it was very good for me. It was just the right growing edge for me, I guess, of having the private space and a safe place to retreat to, because I was pretty much an introvert. I think I'm changing a little bit now, but, you know, and so I go in the room, shut the door, and it's like, ah, you know. But also have that interaction, which really is where my growing edge has been over the last several years. So.
And then just on the question issue, do you want to share a few of the questions that you...
I didn't know I had so many questions this year.
Keep going. Does God exist?
Ah.
That was one. Am I wasting my life? That was another one. Is it time to seek a call? How can my husband be happier? Can I survive as a parish pastor? Why did God call me into something that makes me feel so lonely? What else can I do to make a living? What can I do next in the parish I served? Why did I say yes to the call to ministry? Those were the kind of things that I was dealing with at the time. And I still ask the does God exist question and the am I wasting my life question. I think those will be constant. You know, I know I've impacted a lot of people's lives, but the personal toll that it has taken on me has been vast. So I always struggle with that aspect of being a parish pastor.
Well, mine are not nearly so profound.
One thing about Holden, that's another thing. You know, you don't have to feel competitive here.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but I want better questions. Will I take the time to rest and renew? Being sort of driven is not very helpful in that context. Will I let go of responsibilities back home? Will I, or will my wife handle the home and then perish alone by herself? She's capable of it. Will she do it? This is a new experience for us. So how is that going to go? And my part of the sabbatical came first, so she was left back home with a half-time interim. How's that going to go?
And children, too?
Our kids are grown. That's not too much of a problem. Will I be comfortable in a place as different as anything I knew before? Will my knees handle the ice up in the You know, I had a conversation with a long-timer here who raised his kids here, basically, like a lot of folks said this morning. And there are apparently trails up on top of the mountains. And he said, we used to be up there when the kids were small. And I thought, well, 20 years ago, I probably would have done that. Ain't no way I'm going up that mountain now. But that's okay. I'm not there anymore in my life. My knees are, a classic football injury in my knee, so it sometimes doesn't do very well. And how will the fishing be? I like to fish. I've never fished in a mountain lake before. That turned out to be one of the highlights for sure.
And I began with the question, will I be able to detach from the demands of ministry and prepare myself for sabbatical? Clearly, that was the first 2 weeks. And it takes a lot to detach from ministry. And how will I be able to validate 2 weeks of rest? And then 3 months, and will I have something to show for it? Isn't that shaming?
No, that's so typical. That's real. Look at it. Yeah.
But where is God leading me? What's important priorities for me? How do I heal and grieve? Like, my mother had recently died. And I have a lot more, but I'll just stop.
What does the future hold for me in ministry? Because I'm particularly drawn to small churches and rural settings. And, of course, they have a real hard time surviving. How can I recapture and claim the creativity and passion I've lost after so many years of ministry? I was feeling really in a rut. How do I achieve more balance in my daily life, especially nurturing fun and a sense of humor and playfulness? I had more fun on the first day of school here. I mean, I dressed up, introvert that I am, and rode the school bus and yelled and screamed and carried on and just thought, I haven't had as much fun as a kid, So how do I keep that? And then another important one was, how will the newly reestablished relationship with my parents work out? Because we've been estranged for several years and have just recently kind of reconnected. Part of that was tied up with my ministry. Part of it was tied up with a long history of depression. Just lots of things. But we just kind of started the reconciliation process, and so how is that going to go?
Yeah, some ones similar to Margie's. Can I continue being a pastor? If so, then what will the cost be, and can I live with them? And then my family was here, which I really wanted, so that I could be with them without the distractions and work on being more genuine in our relationships. And so a question I was wondering was, is there hope for the world that I'm raising them in to be better than it's been for me? Some of the larger questions about the earth and the environment and what's happening. And then a self-care one, will I get well and recover from this anxiety disorder? At that point, I was still on medication. I hated the fact that I was on that, but it really helped. And the last one right there, when can I hike to Dole Lakes and fish? I've been up there in 1990. That was my version of paradise. And it had been 13 years, and that was really all I wanted to do when I got back here.
Yeah.
Back
did you do there. It?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Twice.
Other questions? Well, and I'll offer just a quick reflection about some things that we can talk, I think, a little bit more in depth about tomorrow night, and especially if we try to go deeper with some of these topics, but also kind of use you, hopefully in a good way, as a way to reflect back on some things that you would hope for or would wish for from sabbaticals or renewals here at Holden. And so some of the things, what areas we can go in tomorrow, and I was just taking notes here, is just really asking the question, well, now that you have your questions on the table, how well did Holden support you in those asking those questions? And if you had a magic wand, thinking about ways that you could change the sabbatical program here or change your experience, what things would you suggest, mm-hmm. and how would you grow? Thinking about some of the things that you asked about that I was really intrigued by, about differences between community, solitude, and isolation. And mm-hmm. I thought that was really, really rich here, and thinking about in what ways, how did Holden, when you came here as part of sabbatical, bring you into community? How did you know that you were part of a community here? In what ways, when you first approached here, did you know that you were part of a community? What were the times when you felt that you had the solitude, but in what were the times that you felt isolated? And then going back to Mark's question earlier, in what ways were the community, maybe since you were here for such a short time, in what ways did you perceive it as being exclusive? So those are some of the areas. Another area is this idea of, which I'm really intrigued by so many of you coming in with your official role as pastor. And what I heard a lot of you saying is that it was good to, and I'm gonna, you can correct me tomorrow on other things, but that it was good to come here without having the burden of sort of being forced to be a pastor, but having this kind of choice. But is there ways that Holden during your sabbatical took your official role as a pastor very seriously? And, there's one way of just saying, yep, I'm just a person here, I can just do pastor. And there's another way of saying, you're a pastor, you're on the sabbatical program, there should be a way that this is taken seriously. Other kinds of things here of what were the catalysts and what were the obstacles to your sabbatical here. I think there's a lot of different ways that we can go with this tomorrow, and those are just some of the ways that I was kind of throwing out. Another thing I'm just really curious about is that you had a whole lot of different choices that you could have made with your sabbatical renewal, but you came here to Holden Village, and I just want to throw that. What's kind of what's that about? So we're at 7:20 tonight, but I just wanted to throw some of those ideas out because I was trying to take some notes, and we can go with some of those questions, which ways you were productive. And this, I think, especially for this room, I really want to stress this. It really does have some, could have some real life recommendations and reflections on how Holden does things. So we really appreciate your being here and a lot of your reflections tonight. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.